Island, which was cool. It was really something. I'd never been there before. And we spent is Barrera there?
I'm trying to connect with.
Oh, it's still clicking. Yeah. We did a. We went to a 5th of July party on an island where 4 families live year round. And so there was maybe 60 people there, if that. But it reminded me of Idaho,
actually. Are you okay? Is that a meteor?
Wow. He's like trudging through the snow or something.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Wow, Jason. Jason there?
No. Like, Jason got burned up.
Wow.
This is the end.
Did you see that?
I had to. I went and saw it.
Yeah, it was good.
Liked it.
Yeah, I like that it's all centered around sinkholes.
Right?
it couldn't have... I mean, that was what... As far as I knew, that was where the idea for the name of the sinkhole came from, was from that occurrence. Because I remember when I first started looking at the sinkhole, I mean, that may have been a coincidence, but it seemed like there was a timing thing there when these large sinkholes started showing up. I forget what country... the biggest one was, but they don't know how deep they are. There's just these giant holes in the earth opened up, and so they saw that as a call for a sign that things were, sinking on another level. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you saw the red rum on the drawing board in the movie, right?
Oh,
This is the end.
Oh God, I see it. I watched Donnie Darko the other day, and I took some notes, and I realized that I need to have a notepad whenever I watch a film, because I need to be able to go through and just keep track of everything, and there's just so much sometimes.
Well, see, that's why I'm the crazy guy in the last row of the movie theater, because then no one knows if you're on your iPhone, and you can just utilize the notes section and make little shorthand notes while you're watching a movie.
You do that.
Oh, totally. All the time. I figure, movie reviewers, when they watched movies, I'm sure, since everyone, they usually watch them together in the same room, I would assume some of them have a little pad and paper. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But the iPhone notes is it's pretty cool if you want to remember something 3 hours later.
Yeah. Okay. See, yeah, my notepad here looks like A Beautiful Mind in that it's absolutely insane. So it's just like all these things connect. So I have lines from one thing to the other. So I'm like, okay, the little girl in Contact. So I happen to watch Contact after I watch Donnie Darko, right?
Okay.
Which couldn't have been any more perfect. And it didn't occur to me at the time. I'm like, dude, those are so parallel. They're like tangent universes of each other. And so like the little girl who plays the younger Jodie Foster in Contact is Donnie Darko's girlfriend.
Really?
Yeah. And so this is interesting because Contact is all about this wormhole, right? And so you have obviously the wormhole in Donnie Darko. Oh, are you in the snow? I thought it was hot there. Mr. Barrera. Are you in a blizzard?
Is this a forest fire? Sounds like that DJ Shadow album introducing, where the transmission is coming through.
I
had to hang up on you. We've got Robot Mark and we've got Apocalypse Barrera.
Oh no! I really wanted to talk to Barrera today.
No, we're gonna make this work. We're gonna make this work.
See what happens here. At least it would be nice to talk to Barrera. He's a genius. So it'd be nice.
Yes.
So I have this whole thing, and then you have, okay, obviously there's the 2001 contact thing goes on forever. We've talked about it. It's apparent as anything, but just on a a basic level, you have David Bowman goes to Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite, and here you have Arroway is Jodie Foster's character, and so he's the bow and she's the arrow, which I like the symbolism there, the balance there. Also that you have 2010, the year we make contact, and here you have contact. So in a sense, this is like the other 2001 or the next sequence in the Odyssey or something. But I like that the seat of the instincts that the arrow, what he refers to as like an arrow, the thing that emerges from the chest when he's like, when he finds the gun and this that whole the portal can be taken as the Jupiter center because it's literally the solar plexus, which is not not above that, which is the solar center, right? But the Jupiter center rests below that, and so that connects to the wormhole in 2001 in that way. I like the they're talking about Vega. This is a wormhole that leads to Vega, right? And Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction goes to Jack Rabbit Slim's where he does the twist contest. So, okay, obviously you have the rabbit and Donnie Darko, right?
Yes,
Frank.
Frank.
So just to be frank about it, in Pulp Fiction, there's the whole thing of the Elvis man or the Beatles man. Do you remember that? Like, it was the deleted scene is when she comes at him with the camcorder and she's asking him about it. But the part that they leave in is when she goes to Jack Rabbit Slim's and she says, "Don't be a square," and she marks out the square in space, which feels very Masonic to me. But that aside, when she says, "An Elvis man should love it," I'm while I'm watching Contact, I take a note, "An Elvis man should love it," in quotes, just thinking about Vincent Vega. Not thinking about the fact that 2 minutes later in the movie, Elvis shows up because they're driving along, and then in the background there's the "This Way to Oz" balloon. So there's a Wizard of Oz over the rainbow reference at the same time as there's Elvis Presley, and it was interesting because they're saying Elvis is hanging out with the aliens, right? So I don't know. I thought that that was weird that I just wrote "An Elvis Man Should Love It," and then here you have an alien. Then you have Elvis with the aliens. Okay, so I'm just scrolling through my insane notes here.
The This Way to Oz balloon was in Contact or
Yes.
in. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Yeah. No, there's a ton of weird things. It would be nice to. You don't know what's going on with Alan, huh?
I don't know. I thought he was on vacation. I thought he'd be home by now. But the man works very hard. Whenever he can catch up on sleep, I wouldn't begrudge him that. He'll probably, hopefully, pop on at some point.
Yeah. He tends to have a lot to contribute to the contact conversation. That's why he connect. I forget some of the connections he has with 9/11 with contact, and so that's pretty interesting here, considering that it's the propeller of the plane that lands in Donnie's bedroom, which couldn't help but remind me of Flight 77.
Okay.
Not to mention here we're dealing with like a right when I'm looking at this, we have a Boeing 777 that exploded.
77, Flight 77, that was the one that struck the Pentagon.
No, that was the one that disappeared. It like dissolved into nothing, right? I'm pretty sure. Isn't that the one that just crashed and then they didn't even find the fucking black box too? And
Oh,
it,
the one in the field.
yeah, the impossible
I
one.
thought that was Flight 93.
Oh, maybe that is Flight 93. I think I'm mistaken.
Yeah, Flight 93. I know they made a movie about it because that's where everyone said, "Let's roll." They bum rush the cockpit and they dive bomb it into the field.
Okay. Let me see here. I'm gonna look it up because I want to have my information right. I think I can look it up pretty quickly.
Oh, I made a huge sink boner about 3 weeks ago. I just wanna, if anyone's still holding me to it, that's cool. It's a pretty bad one. I was referencing Philip K. Dick's novel, and now I'm gonna forget what I screwed up. I was connecting the starting date of Ubik, which is June 5th, with the assassination date of Bobby Kennedy. But I was putting Ubik being published before the assassination of Kennedy, which is wrong. Ubik comes out the year afterwards, in 1969. Bobby Kennedy is shot in 68. So, if you caught that, that was my mistake. So,
You saying that they're the same date but not the same year?
well, I was just the whole thing for me was that my dad, okay, so my father on his 16th birthday, JFK is assassinated. In the movie, in the book Ubik, it opens up June 5th, 1992, which is my 16th birthday. And so, you know, it's hard to correlate, but I was connecting that to being like this echo of Bobby Kennedy's assassination through Philip K. Dick because he wrote that right around the time that Bobby Kennedy got assassinated.
Yeah, well.
And it made sense to me in the moment, and I was trying to unravel it, but in my head in the moment, I had thought that Philip K. Dick had wrote Ubik and released it 2 weeks before the Bobby Kennedy assassination, whereas he released it the following year. But that's definitely one of those, because in Ubik, Runciter is the main character, and you don't find out till later that it's not Runciter who is dead, it's everybody else who is dead. And so I was connecting that to Bobby Kennedy didn't die on June 5th. All of us di died on June 5th, 1968.
Okay. Well, I mean, that happens. And it's an interesting thing 'cause we're like recording. Oh, Alan just came online. That's exciting.
Hey.
We're recording our whole process here, and it's like if we weren't recording this, we would be, we're just doing our best to navigate the information, and I think we really, really do like. Okay, we got Alan here.
I'm here.
Hey.
Hi, welcome. This is exciting now. So I think at this point we have like an hour and a half. Bill's got a.
I can go a little, I can extend. I
Okay.
just kind of was whatever.
Well, okay.
But moving forward, the Triforce is locked in.
Okay, so Flight 70, welcome, Alan.
Thank you. Good morning.
Flight
Go ahead.
77 crashed into the Pentagon, right? That one. So I'm considering here. Okay, this is a bunch of things I just went into, but I watched Donnie Darko the other day, and I took a few notes and that I thought were really kind of interesting. First of all, I'm just going to run through it as quickly as possible. Little girl who plays Jodie Foster in Contact is Donnie Darko's girlfriend, which is interesting because both those films centered around wormholes. I like that Jodie Foster's character is Arrowway, whereas you have David Bowman in 2001, which is obviously connected with Contact, and so you have the bow and the arrow. The Jupiter Center, that is the seat of the instincts, that is what Donnie follows into the other room to get the gun, right? He refers to as an arrow. And so the artifact that they're trying to send back through, if you watch the director's cut, is also referred to as an, it could be, they use Arrowhead as an example, which is
Right,
kind
just
of.
something metallic or yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it's water, right? And so you have, okay, and then the Vega connection was that the place is Vega that the wormhole leads to. I immediately think Vincent Vega from Pulp Fiction, and then I immediately think the Jack Rabbit Slim's twist contest, which centers around like a target, right? So, which is interesting.
Ooh,
And
yeah. So
then.
he's going, sorry, so the Jack Rabbit Slims is the rabbit hole, wormhole or rabbit hole, but the fact that they're twisting in it would make it like a torus or toroid wormhole.
Exactly, or a twister, which brings us to Oz, which brings us to the fact that there's okay, so I think that, and then I was telling Bill, I wrote down, an Elvis man should love it, which is how Mia Wallace refers to Jackrabbit Slims. So an Elvis man should love Jackrabbit Slims. And then when you go along the way, leading to the event of the initial wormhole that has exploded, the machine to generate the wormhole has exploded in contact, you see a man dressed as Elvis doing the swanky dance, right? So... I like that connection with Elvis with the aliens, and Elvis man should love it. And then, so there's that. And also the fact that the aliens in Contact, they use an image or a video of Hitler with static in order to give a code to us for communication. Do you remember that?
Yeah, wasn't Absolutely. That like the first... broadcast image from satellite or something? Wasn't that the explanation?
Well, that Correct. Might be. Okay. Yeah. And then looking at the swastika as the twist, right? So the swastika, like, okay, it felt like, because it's the first thing they see is just a fucking swastika, and then they back up. And then I also like the idea of connecting this to Poltergeist with the static as the way to communicate with the other side. You know, that's Carol Ann is fixated on the static, and they remove the static was the thing that was the communication in Contact. So my notes are absolutely insane. I was saying it's like a beautiful mind. It's like someone dropped a house on her sister, referencing in Beetlejuice when they're referencing Oz. And then I'm thinking about the artifact, like the house in the Wizard of Oz is like the artifact that is the part of the plane in Donnie Darko that literally comes through a twister.
Jesus. Okay.
So, yeah, so, and then you think of the part of the plane immediately for me reminds me of 9/11, which you connect 2001 A Space Odyssey to Contact to Donnie Darko. 9/11 is all over the place, right? So the part of the plane, I have an image of when they were walking away from the Pentagon with the plane parts and they had the fucking Boeing propeller and there's all these other parts that fucking disappear. And it's like, what the fuck happened to the plane? Like the plane, like there's two planes that basically large sections of disintegrated or whatever. They're like, oh yeah, the plane just disintegrated. Well, it's like, where did they go? Oh yeah, they landed on Donnie Darko's house in another paradigm or something.
So in Wizard of Oz, when the house falls on the good witch, right? That sort of represents, you know, the Dali painting of Christ crucified on the cosmic cube.
I can dig that.
Does it fall on the good witch?
Right. Well, or some witch.
Tell you. No, it's that the
Witch of the West, right?
Witch of the West is pissed off because she was friends with that witch, and Glenda seems to be happy about it. So you're not sure what the hell's going on there.
Right. I think the assumption there is that she's also a bad witch. So it's interesting because you have, like, there's the Witch of the West, the Witch of the East, right? So I think it's the Witch of the East that... the house falls on?
Yes, because it's the Wicked Witch of the West. You've got Glenda, the good one, and then the one who's underneath.
And I think
the
house. Glenda's of the North or something.
Right.
I'd have to look it up, but that's how my memory stands. Is the green one, the famous I'm melting, is of the West. Glenda, the quote unquote good witch, is of the North, and the house that it falls on is of the East. Which is interesting to me for a number of things. Like one is, where's the South? But the other thing would be the fact that Dorothy takes those red slippers from the Witch of the East. I can't help but think of like Eastern Star and stuff like that, or just the idea that the East and West are the bad ones. Sort of this, split
like twins almost, right?
Right. So you have like the. You know, whether you want to think of that as Eastern culture and Western culture, the split between East and West, if we want to go from like a Thelemic point of view that Frank Obama is writing from, is he saying theosophical view, I apologize. If the idea is like we have to unite Eastern ideology and Western ideology, and that split is the bad thing, but... the North is the good thing. Is that, you know, is this about like, again, you know, we've discussed this many times, the idea of like, there's a prejudice towards ascension It's like, we don't want the east-west split. We want the northern ascension.
Right.
But you can't ascend until you grapple with that unity between east and west. Like, if you're all east, you don't realize how united you are to west as a part of your definition. You have to, like, kill one side of it to understand the false nature of whatever side you align yourself with. So, like, in Dorothy's journey, she has to get out of her house. Like, that world, that cube, is the thing that that allows her to start her journey.
Right. Okay. Well, that's her crossing over to the other side. In the other Oz, it's. I mean, so you guys saw the Oz Great and Powerful.
I did not, but...
It's kind of insulting as far as the public is concerned, but so is the original, you know. It's just the whole false god thing and people, you know, being manipulated and stuff, and people are really gullible. It's interesting, but...
Sorry, I'm just pulled out my copy of... I'm just pulled out my copy of Wizard of Oz. So, yes, she... we are so grateful to you for having killed the Wicked Witch of the East... and Glenda is the witch, which I don't think they refer to her as Glenda, but they say, she says, I am the Witch of the North. We are so grateful for you killing the Witch of the East.
Okay, this is interesting because the next thing that I had written in my notes was the Rainbow Compass. So,
hey, sorry, I apologize. I just want to throw this out there for the record. This is not to interrupt you, just to say this is... Of course, page 23. Oh, no, that is a great mistake, because Dorothy says, but I thought all witches were wicked. And she says, oh, no, that is a great mistake. There were only four witches in all the land of Oz, and two of them, those who live in the north and the south, are good witches. I know this is true for one of them, for I am one of them myself and cannot be mistaken, which is an awesome line. Those who dealt in the east and the west were indeed wicked witches. But now that you have killed one of them, there is but one wicked witch in all the land of Oz, the one who lives in the west.
Oh.
That's... So when there's the Masonic tracing board where the north and south is on the left and right and the east and west is on the top and the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
How does... Right. Does...
And then you have the silver star is the rainbow pentagram. Okay. This is kind of... So... I'm like, okay, this is a weird thing where Jodie Foster hands Matthew McConaughey in Contact a rainbow compass, which he gives back to her, which is what she takes with her through the wormhole that she's looking at floating, which is how she realizes that she needs to get out of the chair, because the chair sticks to the wall when she gets out of it. But it's because she sees this rainbow compass, the rainbow compass being the directions, and connecting that to the, you know, the rainbow Eastern Star, women's Freemasonry. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's a pentagram with the rainbows around. But then I'm considering the implications of this wormhole connecting to like Flight 77 crashing into the Pentagon. I find interesting.
Right. You're talking about the Eastern Star pentagram that says fatal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. We should. Yeah. Maybe throw up a link when the time comes. People are generally familiar with that.
Yeah, if anyone just, it's a simple Google something like Eastern Star Pentagram, you'll see, and you can even type the word fatal, F-A-T-A-L, and you'll see it.
Right. Her father is, okay, so Jodie Foster's father, who she meets on the beach in Contact, is the guy in Lars von Trier's Dancer in the Dark, who Bjork shoots to death, the police officer. I don't know exactly if there's a sync here, but I thought that it was interesting that, oh man, hold on, my train of thought here, that, okay, the daughter who is, okay, so Jodie Foster as a little girl who is Donnie Darko's girlfriend, her father stabs her mom. Not to death, but stabs it, and then he goes to prison or whatever, and then they're in witness protection, and that's why she's in the town. I thought it was interesting, just the imagery of Donnie Darko with a knife in the mirror stabbing the right eye of Frank, repeatedly, and then you see Frank is missing. He was missing his eye because he got shot by the revolver. I don't know. I don't know exactly where I'm going with that, but I was spinning around with the connections there, and it was kind of interesting.
Well, the director of Darko, what's his name again?
I don't know. I can't remember.
He did Southland Tales, right? Okay, that was his follow-up, and he's a huge Philip K. Dick fan. There's even a line, it's cheesy to dickheads, but the cop's at the door, and he says, "Flow my tears," and it's just like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. But, you know, he's a huge Philip K. Dick fan, and a lot of his work is informed by those novels, and, you know, I keep thinking of the Aramchek satellite that gets shot down that's connected to Radio Free Albemuth, and I'm reading Philip K. Dick's letters right now, and the reworking from Albemuth to Valis, he goes in depth into the Aramchek's association and relationship to Zebra / Valis. But the whole airplane crashing into the house in Donnie Darko is sort of like the crashing down of the house in Oz and the crashing of the planes on 9/11. It's essentially it's a satellite that everyone presupposes is a governmental conspiracy, but really it's an agent of Zebra / Valis. It's far more complicated than I can explain right now, but it seems to apply pretty directly here.
Dig it. Yeah. I like Southland Tales being the, we're talking about the directions here. And then you were like, who's the witch of the South? You know?
Well, think of it this way, is that you also, like, what's amazing to me is like we have the Masonic compass and square, but we normally think of the compass as the two points that trace out a circle. But we obviously also have the compass referring to the four cardinal directions.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So just by introducing these north, south, east, west characters at this point, you're sort of bringing in the compass. I just have a few quick, I'm looking here as there's some great endnotes for my copy of Wizard of Oz, and there's things like I just, it's amazing to me how, like, just matter-of-factly a lot of this stuff is stated. It says, like, where he writes, the house was as dull and gray as everything else. It says, in some form, the adjective gray appears 10 times in the first 6 paragraphs to emphasize by repetition the aspect of home that Dorothy has sublimated, but that the audience realizes is an essential element in her outlook. In the book, he doesn't call it a twister or anything like that. He calls it a cyclone, which is interesting. This is not from the notes. They're just saying a cyclone could also mean a tornado. The two terms were interchangeable in Baum's day. But basically, I think it's interesting that it's, instead of calling it a tornado or a twister, calling it a cyclone sort of reemphasizes this, the idea of a cycle.
Yeah.
Oh, and dude.
I got one. Awesome.
Yeah.
The guy who blows up the first wormhole producer in Contact, he's the lab technician in Twister.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, who's the girl in Twister? That's not Jodie Foster. That's the one who I was confused with her, right? Who's in Twister? Is that Jodie Foster?
I was thinking of the girl in Jurassic Park. Let's look up Twister movie real quick.
So I never made this connection with Donnie Darko, but, you know, obviously the plane that crashes into the house is the start of the whole journey. And that movie comes out like a month after 9/11.
Is that right? Darko did?
Yeah. So
it came out in the same time. Yeah, absolutely.
So he finished probably the final edit of that film right around the time of the actual event. So, I mean, that's got to be pretty freaky for a director.
Wow. Sure. Now, and just think of this. So the plane crashing to the house is the house crashing into Oz, or as Katz has pointed out, that the Twin Towers are Oz. So it's literally like that plane crashing into Oz is the house falling into Oz.
Right.
So the towers are the Wicked Witch of the East?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, but did you guys see the symbol I put up for Haddon Industries? I put a link. Do you know what that is? You guys see
Oh,
that?
The guy who builds the machine?
Yeah. What does that look like to you?
That's pretty fucked up.
And man, do you remember the sink in the city with like the target on the two towers? Because he has this H, which is basically the towers, and he has his target. And what I can't help is think of the tracing board as the two towers where you have, well, you have the three, obviously, which is building seven included. But then you also have the pentagram, which is the Pentagon. And where's the fucking target of Haddon Industries? Kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And kind of like a, like a hexagram of broken lines with one line that is yet to be changed, or one line that's connecting. I have to think about that a little more, but that's a pretty that's from Donnie Darko.
Weren't they discussing, like, putting a connection between them or something? Wasn't there a whole thing? I mean, there's a man on a wire.
Paul Laffoy was an architect who said he wanted to build 17 bridges between... This is when they were designing the Twin Towers. He wanted to build 17 bridges across them. And he says...
17 bridges?
17 bridges, yeah. Fuck yeah. Which further references it as the star. Obviously, the 17th card of the Tarot. Here's something interesting. I haven't really thought of this, but this is just, again, from the notes here. It's saying, so she says, but I thought all witches were wicked. It says, so did most of Baum's audience. The appearance of a good witch is unprecedented in children's literature and may have some bearing on Baum's acquaintance with theosophical beliefs and his apparent indifference to established religions. Then it says, the road to the City of Emeralds is paved with yellow brick. He says, while it is impossible to be certain about many of the elements in this story that first appear to be symbolic, mixing the color of the road, yellow, and of the Munchkins, blue, yields green, the color of Dorothy's destination. So that's an interesting take on it, but there's also the idea that yellow and blue are pharaonic colors, they're Masonic colors. The yellow and blue combination is something that has been written about extensively.
Oh, totally. It's connected with the pharaoh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so you have the pharaohs and you have the masons, who probably took that from the masons. Mm-hmm. But it was funny because there was a point which I was reading Chris Knoll's Secret Sun blog a lot, and this was a few years back, and where he kept pointing out the idea of yellow and blue, that this is Masonic, this is pharaonic, all this stuff. And then it occurred to me. So I'm thinking, okay, that's what that means. But then I had to design a poster for a Christian dance school that was trying to do something about their show was called "Let There Be Light," and I'm like, okay, what do I make as the poster for this? And so I'm decide to, you know, essentially depict that scene from the Bible, which is, you know, the light coming, like the splitting of the, oh God, what is the phrasing? You know, the sort of upper sphere and lower sphere. I forget what the actual term there is. Firmament. Excuse me. Thank you, Jesus. Mm-hmm. Firmament. But then you have, you know, the whole like light shining. So anyway, I do this blue water with this light coming over it, and it's like yellow and blue. And it was funny because I had just read Chris Knowles talking about how you see so many Christian places using yellow and blue, proving that they were either Masonically connected or referencing Egypt and all this sort of stuff, like almost with this conspiratorial bent. And I'm like, but it occurred to me that this yellow and blue was at the heart. I mean, I wasn't trying to reference Egypt or Masons. It's just like, how else would you depict that? And there was something to me about this idea of the very essential foundation, the firmament, you know, is the you know, is this sort of foundational pairing.
Yeah.
Wasn't there something about yellow and blue connected to the speed of light? Sorry if that's so obscure. I can't recall it myself, but I think it was in LeClaire's blog, something about approaching the speed of light and passing the speed of light, being the colors yellow and blue, and how it reflected itself in the opening credits of The Shining. But it's completely lost to me. So
with the yellow beetle and the blue, everything else.
And their blue lettering, too.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah, blue lettering, yellow beetle. Yeah, totally. Okay. Donnie Darko baptizes his school with water and then burns down Patrick Swayze's house, who he refers to as the Antichrist, which is like Jesus saying that there is one who baptized by water, referring to John the Baptist, but I, or there'll be one that baptizes with fire, talking about the apocalypse, which is literally a revealing, right? And so Donnie Darko, it's like this whole question of like, who is Donnie Darko, other than as far as the people are concerned, because he dies and then there's this tangent universe, right? In the meantime, that people are aware of in their dreams at the end of the film. But that basically he's a reflection of everybody. So like he's the ones doing the work. That's like they're all talking about their concepts of fear and love, and he's actually facing his own shadow. Like they're talking, like Patrick Swayze will be talking about your ego self is in the mirror, and you have to go through the mirror. And he's not actually doing that work, but Donnie is, right? So Donnie goes through the looking glass. And that's what he's having to do. But I like, in the midst of that, the fact that the first thing that he does when he floods the school, like, he sticks the axe in the head of the golden bulldog, which is like the golden bull, right? It's an idol. But then it's also interesting because, you know, in the Arthur legend, there's the versions of the Arthur legend where he dies from an axe to the head, which is kind of tied in with the Hiram Abiff, where his head is smashed by the maul of unworthy craftsmen.
It's also bringing him in as the Tin Woodsman with bearing the axe.
Totally, yeah. Exactly, which is Jupiter. So you have the Tin Man with the axe, and then you have fucking Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite Wormhole. I don't know, I was like, that's kind of interesting.
Here's something, it was while you were talking about the beetle, I was reading this, is that one of the chapter's glaring anomalies concerns the behavior of the Tin Woodsman, who cries over a crushed beetle and yet can slay a wildcat without shedding a tear.
What?
A crushed beetle and a wildcat.
Wow. That's interesting. Huh.
Yeah, take that for what you will. I'm going to put this book down before I...
It's good, though.
Yeah.
And also the golden bull, like the way he hits the bull with, he's got an axe and a golden bull, which is just, and then it says, they made me do it, right? It reminded me of Apocalypse Now, when they do the Osiris ritual and they sacrifice the cow. It kind of reminded me of that. But there was something else here that I was.
I like your take on that. You said it's a bull because it's. So it's a bulldog, right? So you have, on one element, you have the Mithras slaying the bull, but you also have but it's actually a dog, and this sort of axe into the head. So what you have here is the references to Sirius through the dog, which I'll just tell you, there was another thing in here about referring to Toto as an arrow. I'll just throw that out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you actually want me to pull
that. And you're a little dog, too.
Right.
And then obviously, just to remind listeners of 9/11, that was the fire dog that died in 9/11 was named Sirius, and they did a whole ritual for him. So.
Yeah. Just to say, I mean, when I see that axe to the head, I can't help but think of the butler or party goer who says, "Great party, isn't it?" with the split skull.
Right. So, okay, dude, that's perfect. Because, hold on here. Just
while Jack's running around with an axe, of course.
Exactly. And so, the guy in Twister, who's also the guy who blows up the first wormhole generator, he is in a Tales from the Crypt episode season 6, episode 11, called Surprise Party, where he there's an allusion in the episode where he exclaims, where did this hunka burning love come from? Which is a satirical thing in the plot line of the story, because they go to this party in the 70s, back in time, and I guess everybody burns to death or something goes down. I need to actually watch the episode, but I was just looking up this actor and I came across this and I was like, huh, that's really interesting, because that the episode, it like in that way, is using Elvis Presley as that particular thing as a metaphor with a darker context. But I like the just that I happen to come across that right after I'm looking at Elvis Presley as an Elvis Man Should Love It in reference to Vincent Vega and then the Vega system, and then happen to see Elvis Presley right after that in Contact after I make the note, and then shortly thereafter I'm looking it up and I find this hunka hunka burning love, and then he sets fire to the thing. I mean, the thing blows up, right? So, which reminded me that there's that, you know, Donnie Darko does these two actions, which they're saying, if you watch the director's cut, they're like talking about fire and water being these aspects of the time traveler and or the one who returns the artifact, right? And so you could look at it as a baptism. And so the two things that they build in Contact to create the wormhole, the first one is exploded, which is like a baptism by fire, and the next one actually opens up the portal, which we know from Donnie Darko is a water portal. And so you have fire and water being represented as well with two rituals. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's I haven't seen Donnie Darko in a while, but it definitely seems to be a major connector to all this stuff.
Totally.
Southland Tales was pretty difficult to watch. It didn't seem to really offer much. It seemed to be taking on a whole lot and not doing it very well, but it might be rewarding to go back and watch that one more time.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, as soon as you said that, that's one of the next on my docket.
Richard Kelly is the name of the director.
Oh, okay.
And he did The Box? He did The Box.
Did you say that the director of Southland Tales is Richard Kelly?
Yeah. Am I wrong on that?
No. Oh,
I don't think, yeah.
Because the... I was trying to think why that was... Why that sounded familiar. The police commissioner for 9/11 was Ray Kelly.
Oh.
Let's see. James Richard Kelly is his name.
Ned Kelly just came up as a film when I was looking something up. What was that from? Why did I? There's something synchronicity related where I've seen Ned Kelly. So just to tie in why I was like thinking Apocalypse Now was interesting earlier, was that they keep referencing Occam's Razor in Contact, and how the first thing that came to my mind was Kurtz saying, talking about a snail crawling across the edge of a straight razor.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, Subliminal Synchrosphere, where he goes on about Silence of the Lambs, connecting it to Apocalypse Now as both portraying the Osiris ritual, it's interesting then that Jodie Foster, who's in Silence of the Lambs, in Contact, they center, like, repeatedly in that film, the Washington Monument, which we know is Osiris's severed penis. And so it's interesting that, like, if you watch the film, you'll see there's, like, a point where they're walking with the sun, it's either sunset or the sunrise, but right at the Washington Monument, with them like walking towards it, and it's like super obviously symbolic that they're emphasizing this. And we know like the Osiris ritual connecting to Heath Ledger, obviously, who has the hieroglyph for the risen Osiris on his forehead when they find him hanging as the hanged man. Which, and then you have Mem as water, and then you have the water portal connected with Osiris as that. Does that make sense? You follow that?
Absolutely, yes.
Yes, it's a man water portal. He's upside down. He's the sacrifice. Donnie Darko's the sacrifice. He goes through the water portal just in the same way that Jodie Foster does. Kind of interesting.
Well, how do you say house in Hebrew is Beth?
Bait.
Bait. It's
literally, like, if you spell out the letter Bait, you get house, which is why they assume as a... Well, they might know beyond that, but, like, there's certain cases where a letter will literally, like, if you spell out a letter, you'll end up with a word, and so they think that the reason for that is because the original pictographs, because these are all, every letter had its corresponding glyph, would be the case. Like, Nun, if you spell out Nun, you have fish, and so they assume that Nun meant fish, whereas, like, now they think that it actually meant serpent, and that there's some confusion with Tet or something. It goes all over the place, but... yes, bait is house. They dropped a bait on my sister.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I was going with that. Exactly.
Which is the magician, which is the one hand up and one hand down, which is like Jack at the end of The Shining with Midnight, the Stars, and You, which I was realizing was really interesting because I keep connecting Poltergeist with The Shining, but that's one point that I wasn't really occurring to me is the Star Spangled Banner at the beginning of Poltergeist, which turns to static. Connecting with the end of The Shining with Midnight, the Stars, and You, and here it's the 4th of July, 1921, which is, you know, fucking Independence Day. So you have this emphasis on America, but then I found it interesting that in Contact, it's the static overlaid with Hitler, kind of like this weird, like they're having this whole concern and Contact about representing America to the aliens. They're like, why are we biased towards America? Why don't we have more representatives from other countries? Meanwhile, they're also concerned that Hitler is being our representative to the aliens. They're like, oh no, Hitler is the representative, not thinking that America could be anything like that. Even though we commit genocide on the Indians, like, anyways, you know what I'm saying? Like, the hypocrisy of the whole thing is really nuts.
Absolutely. Speaking of Mr. Synchrosphere, he yep. put up a post like a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I read it. I loved it.
Mind blowing. But was that mirrored image of Sergeant Pepper's your?
No. No, well, he did it. I saw it on his thing initially, and I sent it to him as soon as I did it. And he, you know, whatever, he obviously liked it. But they did a thing where when they turned it, I made it a point for when I did it to keep it exact. Like, if you turn it on its axis so that when you blend it into itself, it will be in exact alignment as a perfect square. The one that he did is more of a diamond, if you look closely. As soon as I saw that he had done that, I wanted to see what it would look like if it was just a simple square. And then I took the image of Crowley, and instead of having two Crowleys, because it's him, his head is literally like into itself, so it doesn't look the same. It's not as recognizable. So I just took Crowley's actual head and put it over, and then went ahead and just cut and pasted the OTO. Vesica Pisces in the placement of the drum, just because. Anyways, yeah, I got the idea from him, obviously.
It's one of the most mind-blowing dissections. I mean, he doesn't even need to dissect it, but just throwing the emblem of the OTO next to it and how that is reflected upon that mirror image.
Yeah, and the dick at the bottom is
unmistakable. Yeah, it's unmistakable. I mean, I can't think of a more...
Right, and the symbolism, like, is that for me, I look at that and I'm like, okay, well, Crowley's in the corner, which makes him literally the cornerstone, and then the stone that the builders rejected becomes the head of the archway. So he literally becomes, quite literally, the head in the center of an archway.
Yeah.
When you do that.
Yeah,
he's the rejected one, and then they're making him into the you know, it's underhanded. It's clever. It's sly. I like it.
But yeah, it looks like...
Did you say the head in the center of a doorway, like, here's Johnny?
Why did I just write that down? I wrote, here's Johnny here. I'm trying to remember what I did. Maybe it's elsewhere. but I was thinking of Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter. And then, oh boy, where is
he? Doesn't it look like, too, in the manipulation of that mirror image that he has up, that the Beatles, as their colors merge, but the yellow looks like the Yellow Submarine? So it's John's yellow uniform within the yellow image that he has there. I don't know. It sort of looks like the cartoonish Yellow Submarine that they travel in. I don't know. It seems as powerful just to show someone that.
Totally. And there's the yellow sub, and then there's the blue bus. So bus is sub backwards. So the blue bus is calling us, driver, where are you taking us?
Yeah.
And then the yellow and the blue, man, I had this whole thing going on with that for a while. I was even working with the Gematrias thereof. That was, I don't know, like a year ago, but I went on, or maybe longer, I went on this whole tip with that. It was kind of interesting as like basically what on one level is like this. Oh, so it's in the sea of green, right? Trying to remember what everything
yellow
was.
And blue make green. So
it was the high priestess as the blue and the empress as the green and the magician as the yellow. And it was their relationship. And so I was playing around with that in all these different ways. It was really weird. Okay. So what do you think of so Donnie Darko has to return the artifact, which I guess is the propeller of the plane from flight 77. But then you have, that's kind of reflected as the monolith goes through the wormhole in 2001. You could look at that is an artifact being dug up on the moon, where, like, as far as if you want to communicate what they're talking about in Donnie Darko and apply it to the meaning of interpreting 2001, it gets kind of interesting in that way, especially in view of the Millennium Hilton being like an artifact or something. I don't know. I was going through this whole weird thing with that. The Haddon Industries being represented as a hay, and then connecting the hay with the two towers, which I've been doing a lot because I keep thinking about the fact that they made the two towers slightly different sizes, right? And so there's this thing in Kabbalah where when you're looking at the Hebrew letter hay, it's like the two, it's actually represented by three dalits, which are literally like pillars, right? So you could look at it like two pillars, one of a slightly different height, with them being connected at the top. But that hay is literally a window. And so I was thinking of Johnny Depp in Secret Window, which I think is Stephen King. Is that a Stephen King thing, Secret Window? But I like the idea of hay is also like Adonai, like Yud Hey Vav Hey is often just represented as a hay. The symbolism of Yod Hey Vav Hey can be taken with the hay because that is a reflection of it. So you have the mother and the daughter, so which is, you know, obviously Bina and Malkut, or, you know, Ima and the Shekinah, but being reflections of each other, which are two windows. So it's like you have Yod. It's a hand. It's a window. It's a nail to another window. So it's two windows connected. I don't know. I was going down this whole crazy chain with that. It's kind of interesting. And also the Mad Hatter is Mercury, and that is a mercurial portal.
That Mercury can make you go crazy.
Well, yeah. That must be what happened. I eat a lot of sushi. okay, so Colonel Fitz from American Beauty. Right, Sam Mendes, right?
Yeah.
So he has Colonel Fitz in American Beauty, plays a colonel, I think he's a colonel, in Jarhead, which is with Jake Gyllenhaal, who is Donnie Darko.
Mm-hmm.
And so, wasn't there a whole, I'm just having this come to mind now, isn't there a whole, like, bathroom scene in his dream where, in Jarhead, Jake Gyllenhaal is dreaming, and he's got like, he throws up sand, he's like vomiting all the sand into the sink in front of the mirror. I don't know, that's Yeah, that's kind of weird. Anyways, I was making this connection between that he's a Marine. He's like United States Marine Corps. And I mean, I guess he just makes sense as a Marine. He looks like a Marine. He plays a Marine well. But he's the one like amping up the troops in Jarhead. And so I thought it was interesting that American Beauty plays with this Alice in Wonderland symbolism like crazy, with the painting of the roses red, the, you know, throughout the film you have this whole thing taking place with the mirror, similar to Eyes Wide Shut in many ways, that plays with the Alice in Wonderland symbolism. But I couldn't help but connect, like, do you see what I'm saying?
Michael Schacht has written about how, like, Marines, like, just I guess it's through the etymology. I wish I could remember exactly what the connection was, but essentially, the Marines are like the soldiers of Mary, you know, being Isis. And I said it might just be like by the very idea of like Marines, like Marians. But it's he's written about this before, but the idea that then Jake Gyllenhaal would essentially be a soldier of the High Priestess makes perfect sense.
Totally. And then it's
especially since he gets his wisdom from what is the old crazy lady that he keeps waiting for her time travel book?
Yeah, Grandma Death, who was,
yeah.
So they say Grandma Death was once a nun. I should have written that down in my notes, but I'll do it now. So nun, the Hebrew letter nun, is fish, which is connected to death, and the fish swims through the...
Wait, that brings you back to Sirius. She was once one of the Dogon?
Yeah. Well,
right? She was once one of the fish people. then she came down to Earth and, like Jesus, and took on a human form.
Huh? Yeah, and so that's the thing. That's why she knows the philosophy of time travel. And so when you look at that, she's Grandma Death, and then the Death card pictures the two towers. You dig it?
Like, oh, for sure, yeah.
The beetle between the two towers in the Thoth deck, which is, you know, got his feet around Cancer, which brings us to the Tropic of Cancer. But that's another thing to get into concerning. I really wish we would have gotten Jason on here today, because I wanted to. There's a bunch of things that I've caught, comments that he's made that I wanted to ask him about. But yeah, he just had a thing with what After Hours, this film, from, I think the 80s or something, where he was looking at the character as Paul and he's sitting there reading Tropic of Cancer. And so you could run with the, like, Paul is dead, and how that ties in with Cancer as the Merkabah, as the chariot, as Het. But anyways, which connects to Hay. Anyway, which is closed, which is towers that are equal length, basically. Anyways, whatever. Oh, man.
Alan, did you get a chance to see this movie called This Is the End?
No, I did not.
It's a fun romp.
It's a fun romp. Yes, it is.
It's a fun romp. Yeah. Well, I've never heard a reason to go see a movie better than it's a fun romp. So I think you just sold me.
It's like, it's basically, there's this, if you can go really deep with it, because it's such a superficial film, but it is making fun of fundamentalist Christians, obviously, and how they relate to the Book of Revelations. But then when everyone's getting, you know, zapped up into heaven, it's interesting then to think of that. Well, they're referencing, obviously, the 144,000 who have the seal of the Holy Spirit in their foreheads or whatever, but that is actually taken from the sparks that surround the Tree of Life, where they got that number. So that's kind of interesting.
And it's also, you know, a commentary on the types of films that all those people are kind of associated with. The kind of films that, you know, Rogan and his writing partner Goldberg kind of write, these kind of juvenile fantasy, sort of, you know, retarded sexuality and shit and dick jokes, that there's the sort of the apocalypse to that kind of type of film that they make. Did you pick up on that, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but like what keeps on coming up. Like, I like looking at the Subliminal Synchrospheres blog yesterday and how he's approaching like Monty Python and then being like, well, fuck, George Harrison produced Life of Brian. And then considering like, because I keep being pulled like with looking at synchronicity where it's like, there's like a moment sometimes where like, oh, but that's just silly. And then you're like, wait a minute, that actually like, and I think that like humor. It reminds me of like in Steppenwolf, where in order to change his reflection of himself, he has to laugh. So he realizes there's an infinite number of selves, and the way that you introduce another self is through laughter, because when you're laughing, you're not thinking, I guess. And so you have a space. It's very like laughing is it opens up a space where you can receive insights sometimes, you know. And so there's definitely like, I cracked the fuck up watching that movie. Like, that was hilarious.
What did you think about the placement of the Milky Way bar? Not to put you on the spot, but...
Thinking about it, well, that's interesting that they're all fighting over the Milky Way, and they're within the Milky Way, like, as a metaphor for them not being able to transcend is because they're fighting over, like, owning, sectioning out the Milky Way.
Yeah, right? Like, you know, it's like the one... item of food that of the food that they're hoarding and they're saving it like the best for last, but you know the whole movie is sort of recognizing that they're outside of the thing that they're in and they're looking at it and it's this cheap piece of candy, you know, much like what moviegoers kids would eat while they're watching movies. I just thought it was a really smart and underappreciated thread in there by Rogan and Goldberg that, you know, in this world that they make these comedies, you know, heaven would be like a Backstreet Boy reunion. You know what I mean? It's this very cheap, plastic, outdated view of the way things might actually be, you know? I like the way they put that in there amidst everything else that's going on.
Yeah, it is like it's literally. I mean, we're existing with a cluster of stars, right? So I'm like right before that, I was thinking about the Star Spangled Banner at the beginning of Poltergeist, connecting to Midnight, the Stars in You, in The Shining, and then that the Star Child at the end of 2001, connecting to like 2001 begins with, you know, this giant tit, right? And it's, oh, are you, did we lose Alan?
He's doing something cool.
Okay.
can you see what I'm doing?
Yeah, this is, I like this.
this is what I was working on as the episode image, and then you guys said about Crowley being in the doorway, and I was like, so I was already doing the Here's Johnny thing, and.
That's it. That's, he's scary. He's so scary in that image. It's really something.
Yeah.
Johnny Carson, and Johnny Carson was another target of Mark David Chapman, which is really scary and weird. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely, yeah.
The Shining is named after... we're like, we have to restate these things if we're going to make the point of people. So
no, yeah, I'm all for restating.
Okay, so because Mark David Chapman obviously killed John Lennon, and the film The Shining comes out before the death of John Lennon by, I think, 6 months or something like that, and it's literally named after the song Instant Karma, where it says, we all shine on, and then it's interesting then that, you know, and they show you Wendy is sitting there reading Catcher in the Rye, and that was his explanation for killing him, and then you have Johnny Carson was one of his other main targets. Besides John Lennon. And so it's interesting then that Jack, which is a surname for John, should stick his face through the door and say, here's Johnny, referring to Johnny Carson. Kind of weird.
You know, I was thinking about that the other day, too, about how John Kennedy, he was John as president, but I'm sure his friends called him Jack, you know? And how in The Shining, you have a John Joseph Nicholson, and his friends call him Jack. And
Wait a minute. Jack Nicholson's middle name is Joseph?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He's
Dude. That's f- fucking, that's who The Shining is dedicated to, the book, is Joe King. Is his son, who I thought was dead. That's a mistake in my sync book chapter, because I assumed, because he says, this is for Joe King, who shines on, Joseph King. And I'm like, who shines on? Oh, he must have died. No, he didn't die. Like, he's just, that's fucking weird.
But, I don't know if you guys can see what I'm doing here, whatever, I don't know, I'm just kind of playing, but when you showed me the Haddon Industries logo, it occurred to me that that's almost exactly the Hilton logo. We have, of course, the Millennium Hilton monolith, but the Hilton logo is two towers with the spiral coming out of it.
Yeah.
With the spiral coming out of it. Which there's two monoliths. It's one on the moon, and then there's one over by Jupiter, right?
Right.
Maybe there's three.
So just seeing these next to each other, the Haddon Industries logo and the Hilton logo, is pretty incredible.
Absolutely. Because what? Haddon Industries is the contact. That's the guy who's in the spaceship, or the old man.
Exactly, yeah.
And so it connects to the space station in 2001, and there you have it.
Yeah. So that was the thing with, okay, so 2001 beginning, you have a giant tit, right, with Thus Spake Zarathustra, which is a Nietzsche reference, which is also at the end of E.T., but that's beside the point. It's interesting to overlay that with the beginning of A Clockwork Orange, where you have Alex with some milk in the placement of his phallus, and he's sipping the milk from his phallus, literally, to juxtapose that with the giant tit at the beginning of 2001, when you look at the planets, the way they're represented is interesting, considering like the Milky Way we're milking the Milky Way, right? I mean, I shouldn't utter such things, but it's why cows are sacred in India, right? Yes, because there's four udders. Is there four udders? I believe there's four udders. Which are the four directions, which are the four rivers of Eden, right?
It's the compass points.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
Okay. The Haddon Industry logo is... Did you just notice that recently, David, or has that been floating around for a while?
I happened to watch Contact right after watching Donnie Darko, and I just noticed it a few nights ago.
Yeah, that just seems glaringly obvious.
Right? Yeah, no, and then on top of that, because this is what I was saying before you were on, Alan, I was like, dude, Contact and 2001 and 9/11 are like, you had mentioned a few times, I think, that it's kind of crazy that people are focused on so much on 2001 in relationship to 9/11, which is, I mean, we all, like, he walks down... Haywood Floyd walks down the corridor, and there you have the monolith desk with the Hilton above it. It says the
absolute, Hilton. Yeah.
That's interesting. Like, it's obviously 2001, and then it's like every part of that is very suggestive. But then Contact doesn't really get as much emphasis as it should in that regard. But now I'm realizing that it's the, like, more than anything, it's those three, Donnie Darko, Contact, and because I mean they're all dealing with the same thing, this wormhole business. I guess you just make you put a lot of energy into a movie involving wormholes, and maybe everything just gets sucked up into the sinkhole, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, you know, the deal with Contact is they're very upfront about the fact that they were inspired by 2001 A Space Odyssey. They say every member of the cast and crew sat down to watch 2001 A Space Odyssey together. They did a special screening for the cast and crew to basically say, like, this is what we want to make. Let's get inspired. And so I don't think, you know, a lot of the references or things like that seem pretty explicit and cut and dry. And at the same time, we get into all these other weird areas when once you start bringing the extra layers of sinks surrounding these actors outside of these films and obviously world events, et cetera, et cetera. But It's pretty stunning. My contact to me is really, it's been really important. And there's so much to be learned from, like, the fact that what does Haddon basically teach Arroway? Well, you got the message from the alien, but you're not thinking in alien logic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, when you get the Valis transmission or the Sirius transmission or, you know, the transmission from, you know, what do you call it? Bill, what's your Holy Guardian Angel, your Crowleyan Angel? Whoever you're getting the transmission from, if you just get the transmission, but you're not thinking like the transmitter.
Communication only occurs between equals.
Sure, yeah. It's like, you know, you're hearing essentially gibberish, and you might think you get an idea. It's like, you know, when I went to Japan, and it's like I know like fucking maybe 20 words in Japanese, and it's like, were they saying something about French fries? You know, like whatever. You know, like it's like I don't know. It's like I kind of get a hint, but I don't, or I kind of have a rough idea, but I don't know. I feel like that's a lot of what we're doing, is we're getting these transmissions and then we're not able to fully process it. And I think that's the interesting thing about the Haddon moral of the story, is like, if you're not able to think like the person sending the message, and this could be not ideal in a lot of ways, if, you know, for all the people who were worried about Illuminati messages in Hollywood and stuff like that, they're going to say, we don't want to think like the Illuminati or whatever. But if you can't get inside someone's head, even if you want to be the great justice fighting conspiracy guy, well, what does every great detective have to do, right? They have to get inside the mind of the killer. What does Jodie Foster have to do in Silence of the Lambs, right? You have to get inside the mind of the killer. If you can't think like the killer, you can't catch the killer. If you can't think like a space alien, you can't get to Vega.
Right. Annette Bening in Dreams. And it's cuboid, you know, that's the whole thing. Is that it's cuboid, which brings us exactly the same thing as Stargate, where he's emphasizing, yeah, you have the six directions and you have the seventh transcendent point. And that's exactly what the Vegans reveal through Haddon, Jodie Foster.
The Vegans?
I know. I love it.
The Vitamix is an alien technology.
Absolutely.
You know, I keep thinking of, I mean, it's just such a simple, tiny leap, but, you know, there's a good many years where Terrence McKenna peppers his lectures with statements like, "The mushroom said to me." And, I mean, my God, it's, why can't you just translate that into, "The holy guardian angel said to me"?
Yeah.
Or, "The alien said to me." I mean, it's...
"The Vitamix said to me."
Boom. Just blend all these movies together, brother.
Yo, in all joking aside, you know when you clean the Vitamix, you put the water in and then you turn the things on, right? You realize it creates that little cyclone inside?
Yes, I... For sure, man. But yeah, I mean, why would a Thelemite be so locked in to Crowley to say, well, McKenna talks to a mushroom. I mean, he's not discussing with his holy guardian angel. It's possible that one could be so wrapped up into the path of becoming a Thelemite that they might be unable to understand that corollary, right? I don't know. It just seems... I'm sure if you asked McKenna his opinion on that, he would deny it. But if you got him, you know, behind closed doors, he'd say, obviously, that's what I'm doing. It's the same thing, you know. Whatever. So, I mean, this communication, this contact in contact is just basically a more palatable way to get that across to a movie-going audience or that was Carl Sagan's way of writing a story to, because, you know, Sagan was a pretty heavy pot smoker and I'm sure a psychedelic user at one point.
Yeah, he said it helped him write, you know. He was like a huge advocate for THC.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe. Space is filled with a network of wormholes. You might emerge somewhere else in space, somewhere else in time.
The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way. The cosmos is full beyond measure. Elegant truths of exquisite interrelationships of the awesome machinery of nature.
I believe our future depends powerfully on how well we understand this cosmos, in which we float like a mote of dust in the morning sky.
But the brain does much more than just recollect. It intercompares, synthesizes, analyzes, it generates abstractions.
The simplest thought, like the concept of the number one, has an elaborate logical underpinning. The brain has its own language for testing the structure and consistency of the world. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way. The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars.
For thousands of years, people have wondered about the universe. Did it stretch out forever, or was there a limit? From the Big Bang to black holes, from dark matter to a possible Big Crunch, our image of the universe today is full of strange-sounding ideas.
How lucky we are to live in this time, the first moment in human history when we are, in fact, visiting other worlds.
A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way.
A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way.
Surface of the Earth is the shore of the cosmic ocean. Recently, we've waded a little way up, and the water seems inviting.